Let Loose the Tigers, Queenie Sagas 2, written by Josephine Cox and read by Sherry Baines. Rick Marsden had an ache in his heart, and that ache was Queenie. She'd been gone some 2 years now, but in all those long, empty days and nights, Rick had never once stopped praying that at any moment he would look up and there she would be. She never was, though, and now he had grown fearful that he would not see her adorable face or gaze into those gentle grey eyes ever again. It was a thought to haunt him, to fill his every hour with a dread too painful to contemplate. And he had tried, oh how he had tried, to find her, until, when all his efforts came to nothing, he began to think that Queenie had been snatched from the face of the earth. Yet he could not, would not, give up his searching. For even if in the eyes of the law he was forbidden to marry her, there was no law in this life nor in the next that could command his heart to stop loving her. At that moment, Mr. Marsden Sr. turned his attention from the sombre procession which had this day travelled the streets of London, drawing a vast number of people from all walks of life, from every corner of the land, and indeed from across the world. This awesome state funeral, the first accorded to a commoner since the death of Gladstone some 68 years previously, was a sight to behold. 142 men of the Royal Navy ranked fore and aft of the magnificent gun carriage, bearing a coffin ceremoniously draped with the Union Jack, upon which a cushion of velvet bore the insignia of the Garter. The many thousands of onlookers had gathered here to pay their humble respects and mark the state funeral of a man who had been hailed as the greatest Englishman of all time. On this 30th day of January, in the year of 1965, Winston Churchill, once leader of men, once Prime Minister, was ceremoniously laid to his rest. The nation mourned, and men of Mr. Marsden's generation found much regret in the passing of one who had so valiantly refused to accept anything less than victory in the Second World War, and whose memory would ever be strong for that claim alone, if for no other reason. The pomp and glory of such a send-off, and the unique character of the man being carried to his last resting place, had rendered the whole affair deeply moving and emotionally exhausting for the onlookers. Now, his eyes moist, Mr. Marsden had seen enough.
"Come on, son, let's make tracks towards home," he told Rick, wending his way through the thronging crowd. He did not come to rest until he had successfully isolated himself from the jostling bodies. A moment later, Rick too emerged from the crowd, to hear his father declare, in a voice subdued by the occasion, "There was a man, son. A man among men. And we'll not see the likes of him again, I fear." There followed a deep sigh, which had the curious effect of adding height to his appearance. "Come on now," he said abruptly. "Let's stop for a bite to eat before we get the train back to Wigan." Rick nodded his agreement, all the while searching the crowd for Queenie's face. But he was surrounded only by strangers, and amidst them all, he had never felt lonelier. His deeper thoughts ran on, unheeding his father's patter.
"I'm glad we were able to wrap that warehouse business up so swiftly. It would have been a great pity not to have caught a glimpse of Churchill's last journey."
Mr. Marsden pursed his lips into a circle of deep crevices as he fell into dark, reflective thought. Sensing his father's brooding mood, Rick exclaimed,
"Come on, Dad,"
quickly propelling him down Fleet Street, through the thinning crowd and along the streets of London towards the nearest underground station.